ahead and take the speed up your number one now, runway 27 clear to land green dot. Welcome to Oshkosh, guys.
Hello and welcome back to the Green Dot, EAA's podcast for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. I'm one of your hosts, Hal Bryan. I'm EAA's managing editor for print and digital content and publications. And way over there across the table, it is...
My name's Chris Henry. I'm one of the other hosts, and I'm the museum director here at the EAA Aviation Museum in Oshkosh.
All right. And Chris, thanks, as we always say, to the magic of the internet, we are joined by a very special guest today. Who do we got on the line there?
Absolutely. Totally stoked to have Mr. Aaron Tippin joining us today. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. This is cool.
Well, we can all agree on that.
I'm thinking about that green dot, how many times I've had to try to hit that green dot.
well, this one's a gimme.
Yeah. Okay?
All you had to do was show up and you nailed it perfectly. So far, so good, right?
So roll out.
Yes, roll out. And the airplane's usable afterward, right, which is also important. So Aaron, you know, the world knows you as, you won't say it, but I will, a country music superstar who's had, you know, so many hits and done so much out in that world. But, you know, we know you as another fellow pilot and aviation guy and things like that. So we want to start at the beginning. Take us back to when you were a kid, and what was that pathway for you first getting into aviation?
Well, it comes from my dad, but man, just like it was yesterday, I can recall it. I was 4 years old. He was a captain on a DC-3, and he had a maintenance hop he had to do. And so I got to come along for the ride. And about halfway through the flight, he ran the co-pilot out of his seat, and he stacked a bunch of the manuals underneath my little butt and threw me up in the right seat and handed me the controls of that great big airplane. And buddy, it was electrifying. I was hooked. And I looked out the window and I saw the cars on the road below us, and they looked like my Matchbox cars. And this was before Hot Wheels, right?
Yes. We're all dating ourselves, yeah. But yes, I remember that very vividly.
And you know, and I said, this is it. I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And from that point forward, if he ever accidentally said airport when I was around, man, I grabbed hold of his britchy leg and I didn't let go. I was going with him because I wanted to be at that airport. And I wanted to play airplanes.
It's just fantastic. Now, he was flying a DC-3, but he was in the Air Force as well, as I recall. Is that correct?
Well, he was an Air Force flight instructor in Bainbridge, and Georgia, and he was instructing Air Force cadets for early for Vietnam.
Wow!
So that's you know, and of course he flew everything. Him and his two twin brothers were in Alaska flying the bush when it was still a territory.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you know, it was meant to be, but the funny thing is I was the only kid he had that was airplane stupid like him.
Isn't that interesting? Now, did he, just out of curiosity real quick, did he or your mom have any musical inclinations at all?
My daddy couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. They gave him a job as an usher to keep him out of the church choir.
Well, I guess that answers that then.
But my mother, now get this, boys, my mom, I had no idea she was a singer. I had no idea. She'd never, ever, I've never heard her sing. But one day I came home from Nashville after I'd gotten out of aviation and got into the music business. And I came home and she was in the kitchen and she was singing harmony parts to somebody singing on the radio. And I went, Mama, I didn't know you could sing. And boy, I was surprised. So that's kind of where it came from. My older brother, he was in a rock and roll band. And, but you know, I was in love with country music, man. You know, just for a little bit, I liked some rock songs, but I was hell bent on country music. Hank Williams Sr., buddy, that stuff turned me on.
That's the real deal right there.
That's awesome. I'm so lonesome I can cry, right?
Oh yeah. Hey, here's a little something. I don't know that everybody in my airplane world knows, but remember the movie, The Beverly Hillbillies? And as the movie's finishing up and you're watching the credits, that's me singing "I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry."
Oh, no kidding.
I'll be darned. I had no idea of that.
That's old A.A. Ron.
That's old A.A. Ron.
That is fantastic.
That is, yeah, that's just, that's incredible. With that's the incarnation with Jim Varney as Jed Clampett, right?
Yeah. And Woman from Back to the Future.
Not Leah Thompson.
Yeah, Leah Thompson. Leah Thompson plays like one of the villain kind of ladies. Right. Yeah. Oh, wow. I did not expect to go there today on the green dot. That's amazing.
No, but once you're on the dot, you can. I guess we can go anywhere.
Go wherever we want.
We have no idea.
Well, that's right. You know, once you're on the dot, like I said, it's a good landing. And you take your roll out.
Exactly. Just take your roll out. Pick a direction.
Well, I love that your beginning in aviation starts with such an iconic airplane like the DC-3. I mean, that what an airplane to go flying in for your first time.
Oh, man, and let me tell you something, boys. My wife gave me one of the greatest gifts I could ever have other than my children. But one day she snuck around and got me my type rating in DC-3.
Oh, wow.
And paid for it. And next thing I know, I showed up, and I'm going to get my flight training for DC-3. And that was really cool. I'm also typed in a P-40. And which was my favorite fighter of World War II. I just loved that airplane. So I got my type rating in it, and I got my type rating in a DC-3. And that was our C-47, I better say. And that was very special to me because it took me back to being a little bitty kid and watching my dad fly that airplane. Boy, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I mean, out of a check ride, you know, you're biting your nails anyway, but I never felt so calm and cool and collected on a check ride. I really felt good. And I don't know. It was probably Dad doing all the flying. I was just up there looking around.
That is really spectacular. What a perfect full circle moment that was for you to be able to go back to that airplane. It's just very cool. So let's go back to you as a young person, a younger person again. You know, this die is cast when you're 4 years old, and you knew that's what you wanted to do. So what was your path forward from there?
Well, my path from there was at 14, Dad got me a job as a line boy at the Greenville downtown airport, a GMU, and I started taking flight lessons. And later on, he became the president of that company that I was working for as a line boy. And so I would just take my check back to the flight school and say, let me know when I'm out of money. Because that's all I did was go to the airport, work all day, and then try to get me some flight time in, you know. And so he was my instructor, although he'd hand me off to various guys. If they weren't doing anything, he'd make them go fly with me. So he soloed me on my 16th birthday.
Wow.
And so which is kind of cool tradition because I soloed both my boys on their 16th birthday. So, it was kind of the beginning of the Tippin heritage of soloing your children. So now one of them or both of them have to get their instructor's rating so they can solo their kids. But anyway, I went from that to a multi-engine commercial instrument rating. I also am a helicopter pilot, flight instructor, and also a certified aircraft mechanic where I worked as a shop as a older teenager and a young 20-year-old getting my A&P.
You know, what strikes me about this that's so unusual and so remarkable, Aaron, is that you're doing all this prep work and you're going through, you know, you're not just saying, hey, I want to learn to fly and just go have fun with it, which is an admirable and notable pursuit in and of itself, but you're seriously pursuing the ratings, the commercial and the multi and the instructor, and you're an A&P and you're doing all these things. So I think what you were, I'm not going to tell you how you should have lived your life. Okay. We don't know each other that well yet, but I think what you were supposed to have done was like gone on and be an airline pilot, or maybe, you know, run an FBO or a shop somewhere. And then maybe on weekends, you might pick out a guitar and play a song here and there and just have a little fun with music on the side. I don't know many people where music is the day job and this highly professional flying stuff is the fun on the side. I I love that you got it backwards.
And that's a great way to put it. But you know what? I had no aspirations whatsoever to be in the music business. You know, I was a corporate flying, you know, and you're right. My path was go to the airlines, get a job there, and fly air shows on the weekend. That's what I wanted to do because I grew up flying aerobatics as a teenager. So I didn't have hot rod car. I had a hot rod airplane. And so anyway, the music thing just kind of, I was playing banjo in a bluegrass band because I'm from the Appalachians of South Carolina. And, you know, bluegrass music is the music of the hills. So I learned to play banjo. And on the weekends, I would pick in a little old bluegrass band. And, you know, I had the greatest intentions of continuing my aviation career. But late 70s came along. And if you guys recall, we had a little bit of an energy crunch. The first one I think we'd had in this country. And when I started seeing the majors furloughing pilots, I went, I'm not going to make it. So I'm not, you know, I wasn't college school. So I thought, man, you know what? They were predicting a real boom in the 80s of hiring. And I was just going to step right in because I had the flight time, but it didn't pan out. And by that time, I just decided I did not want to be a corporate pilot. I just didn't want to do that. You know, that's a 24/7, 365 job right there. And I just, you know, shoot, that's other things I wanted to do. So I quit. I was working for Stevens Beechcraft, and I went in and said, hey, guys, I believe I've had about enough of this, and I quit. And didn't know what I was going to do, but I was a farm boy raised on a farm. So, you know, I just went and took a job running a bulldozer and a dump truck and for my buddy and started playing honky-tonks at night and never had any aspirations to go to Nashville. None of that. You know, I was just going to play the clubs till I got too old. And lo and behold, got a divorce. And I thought, well, no excuse not to go to Nashville now. So I packed my little car, quit my job, took off to Nashville.
That is absolutely, that is just remarkable. It's, you know, it's so,
yeah, it is.
There were times I didn't think it was too smart.
Well, you got me over here telling you did it all wrong anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, when I was living on $100 a week.
Wow.
$100 a week what I got paid by my publishing company. So I had to do other jobs, and the employees of the publishing company would let me change their oil and tune up their cars and change tires for them, and they'd pay me for that. And I sold vitamins. I was into bodybuilding back in those days, and so I looked good enough that folks thought I knew what I was doing with a vitamin pack. So they would buy vitamins from me, just people helping me out, knowing I was really struggling, you know, just to survive in Nashville. So they were trying moments, but all in all, it was a great time.
And I would imagine during those leaner times, you probably didn't have the resources to really do much flying in that period, that point. Is that right?
That's kind of the truth, you know, kind of a hiatus once in a while. You know, somebody, I'll tell you what really got me rolling again is when I finally signed my record deal with RCA Records. They said, okay, we're going to do a photo shoot. I said, oh, okay. And so they decided, the photographer found an airstrip that was east of Nashville, and it was a air park. Oh. Well, I went out there and they had got a hold of somebody who lived out there and said, hey, we don't need a place to work out of. Can we work out of your little hangar? And the guy said, sure, that's fine. Well, this guy became one of my best friends in Tennessee Aviation, Ted Beckwith. Matter of fact, I own one of his airplanes right now, 1936 Great Lakes biplane.
Oh,
and,
wonderful.
And Ted, you know, we talked as the day went on. This was his place, and, you know, we're doing all this filming around him. We talked, and he said, oh, you used to fly, huh? I said, yeah. I flew for a living, blah, blah, blah. And so at the end of the day, he pulls out his N3N and says, let's go fly. And I said, yeah. And so I jumped in with him and took off. He said, you want to fly it? I said, sure. And so I flew it around. He said, okay. He said, I can tell you know what you're doing. Let's go back. And so we went back and landed, and he got out his Champ. And he said, get in the front seat. And so I got in the front seat, and he said, let's go. And I laid the whip on it, took off, flew around, you know, shot about four or five landings, came back and he said, "Hey man, anytime you want to come fly, come get it."
Wow.
And guess what? I thought I was over flying, but man, I mean, I was triple hooked this time. I mean,
I don't think there's such a thing.
Yeah.
Anywho, that's the story getting back in.
Oh, that's terrific. I don't think there's any such thing as being overflying, like, any more than either of us will ever be over Macho Grande,
yes,
right, Chris?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe George is there.
Yeah, except tell that to George.
Amen.
You know, that has to be the ultimate compliment you can get in aviation when there's nothing that shows a closer friendship when someone tells you, come get the airplane whenever you want and go fly.
Yeah.
That is it, man. It really is. That's the trust. You know, I got buddies like that. It doesn't matter. You just come get it, you know, and fly it. Don't worry about it. I mean, you can tell when somebody's a good stick, and you can tell, you probably want to ride with them.
Yes, exactly. Or just let them watch from the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go fly. You stand right here. Hold my beer.
Yeah, hold my beer. Take lots of pictures. Enjoy it. It'll be just fine. Oh my gosh. So you mentioned the P-40, and that's obviously a bucket list dream for so many of us. How did that come about? What led you to that? Other than,
well,
you wanted to do it.
You know, I'd always wanted to do it. I thought that was, I know everybody loves P-51s, but the sexiest looking fighter to me was that old P-40, man. And gosh, it just looked like it wanted to fly. And I this came out of kind of music. One of my good buddies, Doug Rosenthal, man, y'all know Doug.
Oh, I mean,
Doug,
good old Rosie. Yeah.
Doug is warbird extraordinaire. And anyway, he calls me up one day, says, "Hey, Dippin." And I say, "Yeah, man, that's pretty good, wasn't it?"
That was really, really
anybody
good.
Anybody that knows Rosie knows that's how he sounds.
And anyway, he says, "I got a guy out here with a P-40, and he'd went out there to demonstrate it because the guy was going to sell it. And they got to talking, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And he got talking about music or something. And Rosie said, "Well, I know this old hillbilly singer, Aaron Tippin." And he said, "Do you know Aaron Tippin?" And blah, blah. He said, "Wow, I love his music." Blah, blah. And he said, "Oh, yeah." And he said, "Well, I bet if you'd let him get a type rating in this airplane, he'd probably come out here and play you a show."
Oh my gosh.
And so I did. Yeah, so I did.
That is just fantastic.
That's hilarious.
And you know, if there's anybody out there they're listening, I have a banjo lately and I know at least two, if not three songs. And if you want to give me a type rating in anything, I'll come play. I'll learn a fourth song if that's what it takes. I'm just putting that out into the universe to see what happens. Yes, indeed.
By the way, Aaron, Rosie is actually our museum speaker this week after, while we're recording this. Next week, he'll be here in the museum speaking. So,
oh, man.
But if he can't make it.
Don't tell him I said this.
No.
But I adore that guy, man. I mean, he is. You talking about a guy that can fly.
Yeah,
man.
No kidding.
I'm always so impressed to sit in the cockpit with him and just watch that cat fly, man. He is good.
Yeah, I rode along with him in when Mark Holt had the Phenom, the Millennium Phenom, all painted up. And I rode along with Rosie. He was in the left seat for a photo shoot we did of that airplane. And like everything else, he just wore it. But I tell you, Chris, if something happens, if Rosie can't make it next week, then we're just going to have Aaron come do the voice.
Yeah, do the voice.
He's got it down.
Yep, exactly.
And that John Wayne walk.
Yeah,
that John Wayne walk.
Exactly.
My favorite Rosie. I we're gonna get off on a Rosie tangent, but we were putting a roundtable discussion together, and he's like, "Well, Chris, I don't know if I can carry the whole show for 45 minutes." And one of his buddies walked in who was gonna be on the roundtable, and he goes, "Never mind, that guy could talk forever." It's my favorite Rosie moment. So,
oh man.
So, that's too funny.
Oh, so Aaron, over the years, what other things have you flown, and then what are you flying these days?
Oh man, I've had good chances to lay my hands on a few jets. Of course, I'm not jet typed in anything, but by Twin Beach, man. Once again, thanks to Rosie and Niels Agatha, you know, another one of my big buddies in aviation and flying their old Twin Beach, you know. It's, heck, man, this 1936 Great Lakes. When I was a teenager, that's what I cut my teeth on in aerobatics was a 1970, I think it was 75 Great Lakes.
Wow.
And it was, they had reopened the type certificate and started building them again in the 70s. And so we had one of those airplanes. And that dad kind of, you know, he knew I really liked flipping and flopping around the sky. So he got something that I probably couldn't hurt myself in too much. You know, and it was a great trainer as far as biplane tailwheel, you know, because it just had such a forgiving landing gear on it. You know, it's hard to make a bad landing in a Great Lakes. But I really love that airplane. Before that, we had a Satavia, Decathlon, you know, and then later on, I got back into the Decathlon because I had my boys coming up teaching them aerobatics. And my daughter-in-law, her, you know, she's mom now and kind of sticking to that job. But, man, I had a little daughter-in-law. She could fly the pants off of that Decathlon. And
wow.
She decided she's going to have babies. So she's off the hook for a while.
For a while, at least. And so you have two sons, am I correct there?
Yeah. I got my oldest boy, Ted, is an aircraft mechanic. He's an A&P AI. And he runs a shop over here in Sparta, Tennessee, KSRB. And that's what he does for a living, is work on airplanes. The youngest one, who's the writer of this new song, American Sky, he's kind of on a flying hiatus right now because he's got so much going on in the music biz. He's like me, he ain't got time to fly, but he is just like my dad. I mean, just like Rose, they just get in the airplane and zip it up. I mean, he can fly just like his grandpa.
Wow.
Ah, man, I hate him. He's so good.
Well, that's good parenting right there. Hey, I want to talk about the American Sky in just a second. But before that, you mentioned Tom doing things in the music business. Did I see that he has like a single and there's a music video called 100 Low Lead? Or am I crazy?
Oh, no, he does. Yeah, he did. 100 Low Lead. And I can't remember all the lyrics to it right now, but that was another one. I went, hey, airplanes.
I got such a kick out of that. In the video, is he in your Great Lakes in that video by chance? I just saw he's in the back seat of something open cockpit, and I only caught a glimpse of it.
He was in the steerman.
Oh, steerman.
Back seat of steerman. And that's me up front flying while he does the lyrics. And that might have been alien something or something he wrote.
Maybe that was another one I was thinking of, because he was in a like an orange flight suit with a bit of a space helmet, as we all wear when we fly steermans.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Wasn't that cool?
That was,
man,
just...
I had so much fun. But let me tell you something, 20 minutes acro in a steerman will wear you out. I had flown the old steerman and done anything upside down in it in a long time. And man, I mean, it worked me to death. I kept going, are we done yet? Are we through yet?
So you're up there doing all the work while the prima donna singer rock star is in the back seat getting all the glory. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. You know, these kids, they figure out he just put his ear molds in, you know, his little, ear pods or whatever. He put them in, put the helmet on, and then he had his phone down here below him, and he was just mimicking the lyrics and putting this down as a video. Man, they find the coolest ways to do stuff cheap. It looked great.
Now, it was cheap, but he must have paid you well for your skills as a pilot, right? I mean, you charged him through the nose, right?
Know. Yeah. Nothing like a musician to make sure the bills get paid.
Exactly. All right. Well, tell us about this single of yours, American Sky. It's so timely with the anniversary we're looking at this year, and there's a really nice aviation piece of it. Tell us all about it.
Well, credit goes to Tom, man. He wrote us a great song. I mean, he just wrote us a great song. You know, a few years ago, he was working with some guys and they asked him to write a theme song for a program, aviation program that just never grew legs. And anyway, Tom wrote it for him And then, a matter of fact, I tried to get him to release a song as a single, but he said, "Nah, Dad, that's just not the direction I want to go in." And blah, blah. I said, "Well, okay, fine." Anyhow, time rolled along, and on several occasions, I've been out to the Living Legends of Aviation. They were kind enough to give me the Patriots Award a few years ago for my service going downrange and entertaining the troops during the past two wars.
You're here.
And they decided they were going to induct me into the Living Legends. Well, Lincoln, thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's a really cool honor because there's a lot of guys I really appreciate in that. And so anyway, Thea and I are getting ready one morning and we're talking about getting out there and, you know, doing this. And they always want us to play a song. Me and Tom and Thea always go out and sing and play a song or two. And I looked up and said, "Hey, honey, we're going out that Living Legends thing." I said, "What do you think about?" She said, "You better not say American Sky." So I said, "Yeah." And so we called our producer and also the head of the record label we're with now. It's called A-Track Entertainment. And we said, "Hey, Noah, we want you to listen to this song and see what you think about it." Well, we sent it to him. He listened. He said, "That's an anthem, man. We got to cut that." And so we dashed off to the studio like 2 or 3 days later. We recorded it and he got it mixed and everything. And so we got to debut that song on the Living Legends. So that was really a cool moment for all of us, for Tom. And old John Travolta got to introduce the song. We were all kind of proud of that. Man, and then, you know, Noah and the guys at 8-Track decided, you know, this just needs to be our first single. And so, bam, here we are.
Fantastic. It is it's a wonderful song. Can you, we're not asking you to sing it. Can you share a little bit of the lyrics so that people out there, they're going to go find the song, they're going to go listen to it. But
I can feel it in my soul. There's a spirit in the wind. It can take us to the moon and back again. Where freedom fills the air. And the eagle spreads its wings. Way up there is where I want to be. In the American sky. How about that?
That's
that's awesome.
That's fantastic. Wow, command performance. Thank you. And there's a great line in there about learning to fly. And, you know, that's such a perfect metaphor.
Take that leap of faith.
Yeah, take that leap of faith.
And learn to fly. And, you know, and from us aviation guys, this is all about flying. But, man, it's also about the flight of the American dream.
Right.
And taking that step, you know. So that applies to everybody, I think.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. Flying is such a perfect metaphor, you know, for the best in people and for the best in human achievement. And it works both absolutely literally, but all the way at the other end, it works figuratively and spiritually as well.
Amen.
All right.
Man, I'm still coming down off hearing you sing. That was really cool.
I'm a little leftover from last night. I've only had a half a pack of Marlboro.
So let me ask you, out of everything you've flown, I know it's a hard one.
This is cruel, Chris.
Do you have a favorite or do you have one that you just thought, I can't believe I'm doing this?
J3 Cub.
Oh man.
Really? That's awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
And you're right. I can even claim that I got to fly, thanks to the music thing, I got to fly the space shuttle sim down at Johnson Space Center. So I've had the chance to fly some pretty cool airplanes and you know, I flew with the Blue Angels, flew with the Thunderbirds. Man, I've had, but still to this day, and I've taking airline pilots, airline captains for riding the Cub. And, you know, they come back and they just go, man, I'm not sure you need to go faster than that in an airplane. it's glorious. You know, I've talked to my neighbors from a Cub, you know, flying over, pull the power back. Hey, how's it going, man? I'm riding the track. You know, hey, man, it is the ultimate in flying. And boy, it just puts you so in touch with it. And that's why everybody should solo in a Cub, everybody, because you really get in touch with an airplane and how to make it fly. It, you really do.
You're here.
Yeah, that's amazing. I you know, you're talking about that leap of faith, and I can remember my first solo. I was in a Cherokee thinking, how did I fool people into thinking I can do this? I remember vividly thinking that on the way out. But so I've got to ask you, you have time in the B-29 as well, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun. I sure do. And Commemorative Air Force, man, I don't get to participate as much as because I work on the weekends, usually when the flights are going on in the 29 and the 25s and the 24. But I've had the chance to fly them, and that is glorious. And I'm telling you what, you get the sensation of what it's like sitting in that nose gun of a B-25. And you can imagine an ME-109 coming back at you, and all you got's a little piece of glass between you and him. And man, I'm telling you what, you get the sensation of how brave those kids were.
Absolutely. It always amazed me when we would have some younger volunteers come out and help, and you know, they have the experience they have with airplanes at that point is basically maybe some video games or flight sim, and they'd always be tapping on the aluminum as they're helping us. And they're like, where's all the armor? And we're like, yeah, there's no armor. Like in a lot of this stuff.
No armor, so. Yeah, he got a leather flight suit.
And a parachute and an oxygen bottle. And
yeah,
you know, in the Pacific, you had your blood.
Wear your parachute on the front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Give that a try.
It always amazed me the guys that flew P-40s out in the Pacific would just wear like khaki shorts and a t-shirt sometimes. And
yeah.
Wow.
That was it, you know.
Wow, that's right.
Well, and that whole generation, and we talk about the greatest generation, it's a term that gets bandied about, but some things that you look at in history, you know, you say, hey, this was an interesting achievement, and you dig into it and you realize, yes, it was, but then maybe you start to see the foibles of the people involved, or you see this or that, and that achievement grows to a point, and then it sort of stops. It doesn't get any bigger the more you dig into it. But in aviation in particular, you know, all those air crews and those bombers and those fighters in, you know, Europe and the Pacific, the Army Air Forces guys, the more you dig, the more remarkable what they did becomes, in my opinion. And the best way to experience that and get a taste for that is one of those firsthand experiences. It's taking a ride or getting to fly a warbird, something like that, and just putting yourself viscerally in the middle of it.
Oh, that indeed couldn't have been said better. That's exactly right, man. The appreciation you walk away with after you've been around these machines and hear the stories and the things they did. Think Bob Hoover stole a German airplane and threw himself out of there. That's crazy.
Yeah,
it is absolutely. We all stand on the shoulders of giants, as they say.
Yeah.
Amen.
Here.
Absolutely. And that's part of the really special thing about doing things like the air tours or keeping the airplanes, the warbirds and vintage aircraft flying is getting people a chance to actually see it, you know, climbing in it, you smell it, and just they're, you know, B-17, for example, they just have a smell. They just smell different. It's so powerful for us, you know, our B-25, you know, any of the aircraft that we do open cockpits with, things like that, where you see people a lot of times who have a connection, like their grandpa or their father flew in the type.
Yeah.
That moment where they get to sit in that seat where their loved one was, you know, you could read books for days on end, but that moment that you actually get to sit in it and feel it, what a lesson that is.
Hey, man, that is right. And that's so cool. I've had the chance to help with the tour sometimes with the 29 and see a little kid or a young man going, oh man, look at this thing. You know, they're just in awe of it. And wow, then you start telling the stories that you were told about the crews and the guys that flew these airplanes. It's wonderful. And I always call myself, and I try to really do this in my home airport, is be an ambassador to aviation. And anybody I meet, man, I want to take them flying because I want everybody to be hooked on airplanes.
Hear, hear. That's fantastic. So Aaron, Chris was cruel and asked you the tough question about your favorite. And so I'll try to counter that a little bit and say, now you've, as you said, you've been able to get some stick time and all kinds of stuff. But what else is out there? If Aaron Tippin had a bucket list and said, boy, you know, there's just one more type I want to fly that I've never had a chance to do it. Is there one that comes to mind?
P-51. I would like to have that. I've already flew my favorite girlfriend, but boy, P-51 would be cool. I know that's a well-handling airplane. Probably Corsair. Yeah. Bearcat. I love fly Bearcat.
So I think what we need to do then is we need to look at your current tour and then map the locations and then import lists of warbird owners and see how things line up.
Exactly.
I just envision you know, guitar on your back, getting on the bus, going town to town and, you know, a new type rating during the week and then a concert on the weekend. And then that mysterious stranger goes
on.
Are you?
Well, I'm liking the sound of this.
Well, hey, you remember who your friends are. Okay. Yeah. You remember who had these crazy ideas. And,
I'll come fix the bus and we'll get going.
Yeah. I'll vacuum the bus, whatever you need. So Aaron, speaking of a tour, you mentioned right before we started recording, you were just coming back from a stop and you needed to get some parts for the bus. As we're recording this here in mid-March, are you actively touring right now? Do you have a tour that's coming?
Oh yeah.
Out?
We just did a show last night at the, World War II Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana. And, that was cool. The stage was set up right underneath the big banquet floor, and there's a B-17 hanging right over my head and a Corsair and a 51 and TBM. It was just, man, all night long, I'm looking up. I didn't even know if there's a crowd there or not.
Well, I'm just picturing your vocals cutting in and out because you're looking away from the mic. You're tilting your head back and up there. Everybody in the audience is like, wait, we came to hear this guy sing. He's just gawking at airplanes.
What's wrong with him?
Yeah, so easy to picture. If our listeners out there want to see if you're coming to town near them, where do we find info about your tour?
You go to aarontippin.com, and it can lead you to all the music sites. Incidentally, the single is out now. It's just released to country radio, and here like 2 weeks ago, before it was ever released, it was number one at Amazon Music. So, she's doing pretty good.
And congratulations.
You just go to aarontippin.com. It's all kind of links to get you to where you can go to, pick up this new single or just hear it.
It's terrific. And as we said before, well, you gave us a sample of it. It's a terrific song. It is unashamed when expressing, what I see as your love for this country, and of course for flying. And that's great because passion like that is something we should never be ashamed of.
Well, I agree. And, you know, I'm hats off to Tom Tippin, buddy. I think this is up to date. I think this is the finest thing he's done writing wise and many more to come, I hope, but boy, he sure nailed it this time.
Wow. You've got to be so proud of your whole family and all their achievements in these two big interests of yours. That's terrific.
Amen, brother. I'll tell you, I'm blessed. I got Thea, my wife's out there singing backup vocals. He's out with me singing backup vocals and tour managing. I'll probably lose him pretty soon when he gets his own record deal. But anyway, I'm happy to have them out there. These are the best days of my music life.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. That's just great. And, you know, especially you've been doing this a while. I mean, I know you're only 35. But you've been at this for some time. So great that you feel like you're at the peak. One last question that I've got before we wrap up. And that is, young person comes up to you. Let's say it's either after a concert or at an airport. And they say, I want to be just like Aaron Tippin when I grow up. What advice do you have for them?
I would say, let me introduce you to it. And then there's some people out there that can really teach you about it.
There you go.
But, man, I'm encouraging, you know, all of our junior guys at our little airport. Every time I see them, I take my time to stop and go, oh, wait a minute. What's going on with you? What's happening? Where are you at now? You know, what are you flying? Yeah, I hadn't seen you in a couple of months. Did you get anything? Got any new ratings? You know, I want to inspire them to achieve more and to do more. And it's so cool. Some of my young flight instructors that worked for me when I had a flight school, they're now with the airlines and, you know, they're constantly coming back to me saying, God, Aaron, man, I'm so glad, you know, I've had the time spent with you and blah, blah, blah. And thank you very much. This is what I'm flying now. And God, that gets me, man. That really gets me.
Yeah, it's, we all know that, we all know that feeling, but it's terrific to see somebody like you out there who's got a bigger voice and a nice big platform, helping spread the good word about flying and all the stuff that we all love so much. And it's great to talk to somebody like you who's the real thing. You know, you step off the stage and you're just another one of us hanging around in the hangar.
Well, I got to tell you, boys, I only got one personality. This is it. So,
wow.
I'm not smart enough to have two. So there ain't no difference. Meet me on the street or as soon as I step off the stage. Every night, I've done it for 36 years now. We sign autographs until everybody's gone. I'm the guy that turns the lights out because I just want to say thanks. And I want to show people how much I appreciate all they've done for me so that I could afford to fly airplanes.
Oh, there's no better way to wrap this episode than on that particular note. Aaron Tippin, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us today. And I know Chris and I both, you know, look forward to bumping into you at AirVenture or some other airport, some other place, and getting a chance to say hello in person.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you guys taking the time. Nothing I'd rather do than yap about airplanes and music. So you give me a chance to do it. Yeah, you look for us at Oshkosh and maybe out there on the highway, we get a show close. Anybody out there, come see Aaron Tippin. It's fun. You'll have a good time.
A splendid time is guaranteed for all, as they say. Well, Aaron, thanks so much once again. Anybody out there that's listening, please send us that feedback. Give us those reviews. Rate us at iTunes and, you know, Google Play, Amazon, all those other places where you're consuming podcasts. Let us know what you think. You can also send us feedback directly at feedback@eaa.org. Every one of our podcast episodes also has a dedicated landing page on our blog at inspire.eaa.org. That's our hangar flying blog. So with that, our thanks once again to everybody for listening and for all the good words we've gotten from all of you over the years. Thanks to Scott for his tireless efforts in producing and editing these things and putting them together. And we will look forward to catching up with you next time when you're cleared to land on the green dot.